Hi, welcome to True Creeps, where the stories are true and the creeps are real. We'll cover stories from grotesque gore to the possibly plausible paranormal, to horrifying history, to tense and terrible true crime, and everything else that goes bump in the night. We're your hosts, Amanda,
and I'm Lindsay, and we want you to join us while we creep.
We cover mature topics. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, everyone. Today, we are going to be talking about the tragic murders of El Rey, he went by Bud, and June Runyon. This case started with a couple heading out to buy their dream car, and it ended in a horrific murder. This case was recommended by Stacy, one of our patrons. So thanks, Stacy. It was a very interesting case to research.
I appreciate that. I also like it particularly because there's an overlap with one of Stacy and her husband's hobbies.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, interesting. So we also got to look into a little bit more about that, which I liked.
Now we understand your hobby a little bit more. It is very interesting. It sounds fun, honestly. So first, let's talk about who Bud and June were, because they were the loveliest of people.
They really did sound like it.
So many people had such great things to say about them. So we're going to try to condense some of it because they did so many good things. Anyways, so there's a whole Facebook group that's dedicated to their memory. Many of the people that were interviewed in various news articles also shared great stories with them. Bud served in the Army's 1st Cavalry Division in Vietnam. Bud met June, who was a teacher at the time, at church in the 1970s. They were married almost 40 years at the time of their deaths.
Wow.
That's a feat. You don't see that very often. Bud started a charity called Bud's Bicycles. And what he would do is he would fix up bikes for kids. And it was for kids that could really use them, who didn't have anything like that. And a story that their daughter, Brittany Patterson, had shared is that her father was once driving through Marietta, Georgia, before Christmas Eve years ago. She didn't say which year. He had spotted two young girls that were going through a dumpster. And so what he did is he went home and he decided, I'm going to fix up two bikes that his daughters didn't use anymore. He fixed them up and he went and he delivered them to the girls as gifts.
That's kind.
That's a special person. What that ended up doing is it turned into a charity. He enjoyed doing it so much that it turned into a charity. And the charity was loosely run out of their church in Marietta. The couple built a shed in their backyard to house all the bikes as they were like getting them ready for kids or getting ready for like a big donation day. Then the donations eventually grew and it included things like food, household items, school supplies, clothes, blankets, Thanksgiving meals, like anything you could think of that a family would need. They were there for them, for their community. So they were like the food pantry place, but run out of their basement.
Yeah, they sounded like they were very kind people who showed up selflessly in their community,
yes.
Which is really beautiful because you don't always hear about that. Another memory that their daughter shared about Bud was that every Saturday they would go to get donuts. She would go with them. But oftentimes when she was there, there was a guy who she didn't know. And her dad always paid the bill and she didn't really think much of it. But later on in life, she realized that it was typically somebody who was experiencing homelessness. And her dad was just like, come in, have a meal with us, and didn't make it a thing, right? It was like, here's just a person. We're going to sit and have a conversation and exist with them. And it's not just, here's money, go away. It's, I'm going to treat you like a person. And I'm going to treat you as though, like, why wouldn't you come sit at my table?
And that was when she was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
He never even explained it. He was just like, this is our friend. We're all going to have donuts together.
Yeah.
I love that.
And I love raising children to be like, kindness is our default.
Yes.
So the timeline's a little bit muddy, but from what we understand, Bud and June ramped up their outreach in 1991, and then it increased even more in 1996 when they joined up with a church friend.
They were a big part of the ministry, too.
So we watched an interview with Bud and a reporter that was on the Facebook group for this. There was a reporter that was talking to Bud, and he was recalling that in the year prior, he wasn't able to give bikes to all the kids in their complex that had wanted them. And like, he was misting up, like it affected him because he was like, I want to be able, like, I want every kid here to have a bike. I don't want any kid to have to not have that. It's just so apparent from everything you see and hear about Bud and June that they truly did dedicate their lives. And it was just such a core part of their person to care for others, from gifting children's bikes to helping people keep food on their tables. They were just good. their daughter Brittany shared that June always supported Bud's big ideas, including his idea to find a similar car to the one that he had had when he returned from Vietnam. Brittany said he loved to laugh and have fun. He always liked classic cars, and we used to go to car shows as kids. After retiring, Bud wanted to find and purchase a car similar, again, to the one that he had when he got back from Vietnam. The search for this car turns out in this completely horrific and unexpected way, and that's really what we're going to talk about today.
So let's talk about what exactly happened. Bud was looking for his old car, right? He wanted a car as similar as he could find it. What he had had when he came back from Vietnam was a 1966 Mustang, and he actually purchased it while he was still in the Army after he returned from the Vietnam War, and he just really wanted another one. He was like, I'm retired now, and you know, like that was like a high point in his life, getting, you know, a really cool car at the time. So I see it, right?
It's also a hot car. I'm going to just say it. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. So in January of 2015, he put out an ad on Craigslist for a car similar to what he had had before. At the time, Bud was 69 and June was 66. The couple was super excited when they received a response to their ad. Someone was selling a car like what they were looking for. The only thing was, the car was a little far away, and it was in McRae, which is about 183 miles away or 3 hours of travel time from where they lived. So they're like, you know what, let's just plan a little trip. Let's go take a look at this car. They had the intention of buying it. They wanted to look at it, make sure everything's good, purchase it. On Thursday, January 22nd of 2015, they left their home in their champagne-colored 2003 GMC Envoy, and they were heading out to look at this car. Hopefully purchase it. They, though, had to be back by the next day because they were supposed to babysit their grandkids. And their true plan was just head back right after they bought the car. So 3 hours there, look at the car. It shouldn't take terribly long, 3 hours home. Unfortunately, they never showed up to babysit. And that's when their daughters knew something was wrong. That definitely wasn't like them. Their daughters met with police to report them missing. And they really did everything they could. They were doing interviews. They were cooperating with authorities. They even made the Facebook page to help get the word out to the community that their parents were missing. And originally it was called Find Bud and June Runyon. Since their parents were super active in the community, many people showed up and did their best to help. The family called hospitals, various sheriff's offices in the area, hotels, everything they could think of, and they had no luck. And then on their Facebook page, they also shared that Bud had his iCloud off. And Find My Friends was not working because there was no cell service. So wherever they were, the phone wasn't going to help. They also shared that AT&T wouldn't release any information to them at that time. So they were kind of at a standstill. They had no idea, you know, like a 3 hour trip. That's a long distance to check between, you know, like if something happened on the way there, or on the way home.
In this situation, I'm sure it was very frustrating that the phone company wouldn't give them records. But I do think it's a good practice to only release that information with a warrant because you just never know what's going on with people. And in this situation, it's concerned daughters, but like it could be a stalker. It could be an abusive family member. So I think that it's a generally good policy, but
still infuriating.
Yeah, I would be frustrated.
Yeah,
I would be pissed, too. Like, I just want the information to find my parents. And why won't you give this to me? Like, we have a good relationship.
Yeah. And on their Facebook group, you could almost see the day by day, hour by hour play of what they were doing because they were posting it for all of the community who loved them to stay up to date.
So on January 23rd, they posted at the Facebook page that Cobb County, their parents' home county and the families, never informed McRae authorities that Bud and June were missing. McRae was where they were. There was zero cross-jurisdictional communication. And it feels like, at the very least, you should call the police department or sheriff's office or what have you to make sure that there's not just some easy answer, but also they could have investigated sooner. So many people shared this on Facebook that it ended up getting to the county where McRae is, which is Telfair County. They ended up reaching out to Cobb County Police Department themselves. They're like, hey, we heard you have a missing person that is supposed to be here. Telfair County started searching the area. And in a screenshot on the Facebook page, it showed that the news confirmed that the cell phone data showed that Bud and June did make it to McRae. And they got there around 5:30 p.m. the Thursday that they had left. But then they were unable to ping the phones. And so the Telfair County Sheriff's deputy searched the area where their last phone call had taken place. And that was made to a burner phone. We already hate it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like very little good things are going to come from a burner phone.
Yes.
They also noted that the burner phone's signal had since moved south. We tried to find a news article for more information on that, but it looks like a lot of them are just no longer available because they were from local news stations. They'll often take down articles within a couple years, and that's even when things are unsolved, which I find bewildering, especially in a world where there's not always a hard copy equivalent. It would be one thing if it was also in a newspaper, so there's like some record of it somewhere, but it's like you literally just deleted it from the record of the world.
Yeah, there's a ton of, we'll talk about why it kind of got more coverage later, but they refer to those first few articles that are no longer available anymore, which was very frustrating.
Now, the next day, search and rescue continued to look in the area, and they also used a helicopter for their search. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation, the GBI, issued a bolo for the couple and their car. The following Sunday, on January 25th, news was shared that the Telfair police identified a suspect in Bud and June's disappearance. And their name was Ronnie Adrian J. Towns, and he was 28. And that is who Bud and June had been communicating with regarding the Craigslist ad. Now, Bud's cell phone records show the last call was to a number linked to the Craigslist ad, and that happened to be Towns. So it's unclear whether law enforcement reached out to Towns before or after the news broke about their disappearance and like things, it like really picking up more. But on January 25th, Towns voluntarily went in for questioning. And during that questioning, the information he provided was found to be false and deceptive. Information being false sounds like, hey, your facts don't line up. However, deceptive, that sounds a lot like a polygraph, which we're like, I never really fully trust a polygraph as a solid determinant, but we have some other links like cell phone records here, right? Telfair County Sheriff Chris Steverson said that Towns, quote, initially denied having ever met them.
Interesting.
Worrying.
Especially because there's a lot more proof nowadays.
Yeah.
If you've met someone or not.
Yeah. We're talking about 2015. It's not that long ago.
So later that same day, investigators determined the phone records and cell tower data contradicted what Towns had said in his statements. They saw that his phone was in contact with Bud's phone. So you can't say you haven't met or talked to someone if there's literally calls and call records.
I will never understand how people in the 2010s are still doing dumb shit with cell phones and acting completely and utterly shocked that law enforcement can look up those records. Look, we know what you can find. We know what you can see. We know what's available. Why lie? What are you going to find out?
Right. So law enforcement used some of the pings to narrow down where to search for Bud and June. Both Towns and Bud's phones pinged to the same area near McRae. Towns' phone actively placed him in a rural area near a pond. Towns was placed under arrest later that day for giving false statements and criminal attempt to commit theft by deception. So they knew something in this transaction was not right.
Well, also, they could probably see if he actually had that car.
Exactly. And
like, that's pretty easy.
Surprise, surprise. No record exists where he had that car.
Mm-hmm.
So he was booked into the Telfair County Jail and he was being held pending additional charges related to Bud and June's disappearance. At this point, their bodies had not been found yet. Search efforts continued on Monday the 26th and included the Telfair County Sheriff's Office, GBI, volunteers, and a helicopter search crew. So many different ways of searching for them in this area where the phones had pinged. A helicopter flew over that pond and they spotted Bud and June's submerged GMC car. Now, this area, this pond, was where kind of near where Town's home was as well. So it wasn't even that far from where he lived. Law enforcement and dive teams recovered their vehicle from the pond. And then a short distance away from the car, they found two bodies that they believed to be Bud and June. Their bodies were transported to the GBI crime lab, where they were later confirmed to be the missing couple. Autopsies later confirmed that Bud and June had died of a gunshot wound to the head. Once their bodies were found and the news of their death spread, there was a memorial placed on their front yard. It made me so sad seeing the pictures from this.
Yeah.
It included a flag flying at half staff, honoring Bud's military service. And then also there was a bike that one of the neighbors, Jamie Knowles, placed below the flag to signify their charity work. People would also visit the memorial and leave things outside. So there's tons of flowers and little gifts and just so many of them. Also, just to note, authorities found no evidence when they combed through town's records and stuff that he ever owned a car like the one that Bud was looking for.
I was just generally curious as to what a car like this would sell for. It's a used car. How much could it be? But just the quickest of internet perusals, I see it ranging from like about $22,000 to $170,000. So it seems like depending on the mileage and the condition of the car, it's possible that they were carrying quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
So on January 28th, Towns had some new charges added, and it was malice murder, felony murder, armed robbery, and possession of a firearm during the commission of a felony. So let's fast forward to March. And again, we're in 2015. 50 prospective jurors were summoned to serve on the grand jury, but fewer than 16 appeared on time and ready. Since exactly 16 jurors are needed, the presiding judge told the sheriff to find the jurors who failed to show. The judge also instructed the court clerk to supplement the number of prospective grand jurors with people who had been summoned to serve on a trial jury. From what we could see, the clerk and her deputy reviewed the list of 150 prospective jurors who had been summoned to appear the following day to serve as trial jurors. And ultimately, two of those jurors ended up serving on the grand jury that indicted Towns. So it just sounds like there was an unnecessary mess when they were trying to work on this grand jury. The grand jury, which, again, we're in Telfair County, indicted Towns, charging him with murder and armed robbery. After this, the case was delayed several times for various reasons. The prosecutors decided to push for capital punishment, which comes with a harsher sentence. So we don't always talk about the need for grand juries, but indictment through grand juries, it's different based on different jurisdictions. But in Georgia specifically, grand juries are used for serious crimes, including capital cases like this one. In 2017, Towns' original indictment was dismissed by the Georgia Supreme Court, and they said it was because of problematic grand jury selection. And they said that the grand jury was improperly formed and were not randomly chosen. They were literally picked. At a hearing, the clerk we talked about earlier said she based her selections on the assessment on whether she had already had the information needed to quickly contact the prospective jurors and whether they will be able to report immediately. So technically, it wasn't fully random. And this obviously contributed to additional delays. So the next grand jury, which was properly formed and random, indicted Towns again. Then the case was delayed for several more reasons, including legal motions, backlogs in the court, and COVID, which caused even more backlog. During all of these delays, more evidence and details started to pile up against Towns.
So then, as all the delays are happening, on April 14th of 2024, which just seems crazy because this case isn't terribly long ago, but like long enough that you think it would have had a resolution before 2024. But on April 14th of 2024, a magnet fisher in Telfair County, Georgia, found something tied to this case. The Telfair County District Attorney was hoping to have this trial in September of 2024 at this moment before this was found. So new evidence makes things sometimes take a little bit longer. So just a quick tangent, though. What's magnet fishing? Per fishingbooking.com, magnet fishing is exactly what it sounds like. It's fishing, but with magnets. Shocking, we know. But there really isn't much more info than that. You tie a rope or some sort of strong line onto a magnet that is fairly strong. You throw it into the water, and if you're lucky, it's going to stick to something, hopefully something interesting, that you can collect and take home your new treasure. So think about people that have dropped keys down the drain, or if you've lost a knife, like while fishing, while walking on bridges, and all kinds of stuff. But
yeah. If you've dropped metal in water, a magnet fisher is going to find it.
They are. So it's a very common thing. People lose metal objects all the time. And that's kind of how magnet fishing got started. Since then, it's developed into a fully fledged hobby that's part of environmentalism and also part treasure hunting, because you don't really know what you're going to find. So why do people do it? As we mentioned, part of it is ecological. You can remove a ton of junk from the water, cleaning up your local river, making a lake safer to swim in, etc. You can also enjoy the thrill of fishing without hurting any fish, which I like the most. And the main draw, though, is the possibility of finding some sort of treasure. We're talking about magnet fishing because something related to this case was found. According to a press release, the magnet fishermen pulled a .22 caliber rifle while they were fishing in Horse Creek on Old Prison Camp Road. This matched the caliber used in the murders, and it was fairly close. This was less than a mile away from where Bud and June's bodies had been found years earlier. The magnet fisher could not get a hold of the sheriff's office, so he called Chris Steverson, the former sheriff who we had talked about before, and Chris was able to get someone from the sheriff's office to send an agent out to retrieve the gun.
Interesting.
How hard is it to get, I found a gun. Someone please come get it. That's one thing that I saw too, is like when you are magnet fishing, a lot of stuff is like, you found it, it's yours, with a select few items where you have to report it. And depending on like the county and the laws in your area, most, if not all, guns were like a number one, you have to report it. They send someone out, they take the gun. Then the same magnet fisherman continued to fish in that area. And on April 16th or 17th, we've kind of seen both dates, they pulled out more evidence. This time they got a bag that contained the driver's license and credit cards that belonged to Bud and June.
I wonder if there was like change in there too, and that's why it picked up on the metal detector, you know, because I was like, what would draw it up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever it may have been in. Or I mean, some people put their cards in like metal wallet thingies. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
That makes sense.
Also, they found a cell phone that was believed to belong to Bud and June. District Attorney Tim Vaughn of the Oconee Judicial Circuit said, it was a good case already, but this makes it an even better case. The only negative thing, finding new evidence can delay a trial again. So that's more waiting for their poor family.
Yes. Because again, also remember, once evidence is uncovered, both parties have to have access to it. So yep. It's not just like, oh, the prosecution is building their case. It's also that the defense needs to be able to review it, test it, do whatever they have to do as well. I just want to point that out because I feel like when you think like, oh, hey, you're just gathering more and more evidence, it's like, yeah, but everybody has to review it. So within days of finding the gun, officials executed a search warrant at a home on the 400 block of Webb County Cemetery Road in McRae, Georgia. Towns lived on the same block prior to his arrest. And once inside the home, investigators recovered additional evidence that was then further analyzed at the crime lab. Amanda mentioned this before, but just as a note, should you decide to go magnet fishing, take a little peek at what is like a mandatory handed over to law enforcement item so that you know what you need to do in order to preserve any like crime scene evidence. And so that a scene can be documented, because it's one thing to be like, hey, I want a weapon out of the water. That's probably generally a positive thing. But in situations like this, like say the person who took it magnet fishing left it on the shore and then somebody else found it, it makes it a little bit stranger to be like, where did this come from and how did it get there? Versus, you know, the person who pulled it out of the water being like, I can testify that I pulled this out of the water.
And I'm the only one that handled it for a moment. But also, yeah, so if you find one, don't tamper with it. Don't play with it, obviously.
Yeah.
And then I would treat any gun as a crime scene.
Yeah.
Evidence of any kind. So
if I find a gun in water, I'm assuming someone put that gun in the water.
Purposefully.
Purposefully. Mm-hmm. I'm not assuming like, oh, you know what? They probably had a gun on their pocket and they just dropped it into the water and left it there.
In certain states. Yeah.
I know.
It's wild.
Even still, it's like an expensive thing. Regardless of like my feelings on guns, I'm like, I feel like people don't want to lose their expensive items. But anywho.
There's a lot of stupid people that have guns here.
I mean,
a lot of stupid.
Fair.
But anyways, yeah, try to preserve it like it's potential evidence. And I did see something about documenting the scene.
Mm-hmm.
If you pull something like that, like taking pictures and stuff.
Yeah, like what is around? Yeah, that makes sense. So in November of 2024, Towns pled guilty so that he could avoid the death penalty. And he was sentenced to life in prison without parole. Judge Sarah Wall said, you were sentenced on count one, malice murder, to life without parole. You will spend the balance of your life with the Department of Corrections. As to count five, malice murder, you have been sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. It's so devastating that Bud and June were like, we're going to take a quick little road trip, grab a piece of our younger years, and then they lost their lives because somebody was just fucking awful.
Yeah.
So, woof. I feel like it's one of those things where like there was a time when you were like, you don't go to people off the internet and buy things. But that is so commonplace now, right? Like, it's just like, it's a part of how we interact with the world. It used to be that people would go to like specific auctions or flea markets or yard sales. And that's how you really bought like used items like that. Or you would go to like, it would be like a consignment or a car show for like vintage cars and stuff. But like now, most people are selling things on online marketplaces where you can sell used things. And whether it's Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace or something else similar, like, it's just a part of the world now. So we're going to just talk about a couple online marketplace shopping tips. So Harry Huck, who runs a private investigation company, says that you should be very leery of Craigslist because, quote, you don't know who you're talking to.
That's any online for the most part.
Yes. I will say Craigslist feels like the shadiest through and through.
Mm-hmm. I only think of free animals and like dog fighters on there.
Yeah. I mean, I was counting typewriters. I bought at least one from there. Could be more than that. I think the rest I've gotten elsewhere. So per Harry, the first thing you should do is verify who you're buying the products from. Have them call you a few times and have them send a photo of themselves with the product. So this way you can prove that they have it, that they are who they say they are, and then also that they're not calling you from different numbers so that you actually do have their phone number. He also says, don't bring cash. You can always make an ATM withdrawal. So you can always go look at the whatever you're going to buy from that person and then make a decision and be like, okay, I'm going to go get cash now. You don't have to show up with a large amount of money on you. And then lastly, always meet someplace as public as you can be where there's going to be a lot of people around. If you're having to meet in a parking lot, make sure you're meeting there when the businesses are open so it's not empty
and closer to the front door. Also, a couple other tips. When using an online marketplace, look up the seller's reviews when possible. Read the actual reviews and make sure that they don't sound like they're bots or they're fake as well. Because sometimes you'll see like the same review like 50 times and you're like, they didn't say that 50 times.
Mm-hmm.
Funny enough, Mike likes to build computers. That's his hobby. He loves doing it. So he's like, I'll just start selling them because like, what are they doing here? I build it for fun and then it just sits here. So he started selling them. And he was really excited because someone messaged and wanted it, his first one. And I'm like, oh, cool. Like, where are you meeting them? Like, I want all the information. I want their name, their Facebook profile, everything. And so I take his phone. I look at it and I was like, honey, no.
Like, I don't want you to die.
And he's like, what? And I was like, this is a fake account. It was created earlier. They have no reviews, no buying anything. Like, this is wrong. They are probably going to steal the computer from you. Please don't go.
Yeah.
So he messaged them for additional. I told him to ask. I had him ask a couple more follow-up questions and stuff. They stopped responding. So I was like, be cautious. Look at everything. Before I sell or buy something on something like that, I look at their profile and I'm like, are these real pictures of someone? How long has their profile been established? Are they tagged in anyone's photos or things if it's available? Take a look. Are they a real person or not?
Yeah.
Now, if it seems like a deal is too good to be true, it probably is. So use caution. And Facebook specifically has tips when buying or selling cars that we saw too. Get a vehicle history report and arrange for a car inspection before buying. Personally, I've done that before when I bought my first car as a teenager and had them meet me at a shop.
Yeah.
And I had the shop do a once over. So like it's public. The people are there and they could be like, this is a legit car or this is, you know, going to break in 5 days. Also, never send a deposit to hold an item. That is wrong. It's shady, especially from individual sellers that aren't like a verified online store. So like if it had like a brick and mortar place, you could go there. You could figure it out.
Yeah. Or if it's like a local artist or something and you're buying some of their art and you're like, oh, I'll do local pickup as opposed to getting it shipped.
Exactly. Also, like you said, meet in public spaces. And what I saw online is there's a place called safetradespots.com. I didn't know that this was a thing. Like, I've seen those signs for it, but I didn't know how to find them. You go to safetradespots.com, you put in your zip code, and it has a list of safe meeting spots. In my zip code, it had a particular police station that had like an area set up for it.
That's cool.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. So like OfferUp even made some signs for these spots, and it says it's a community meetup spot for internet purchases. A few that I saw on there when I was just putting in random zip codes are bank lobbies.
Oh.
The entrances of particular stores and places like that where there's going to be a bunch of cameras, like in the parking lot and inside.
Yeah, I wouldn't even think about that.
Right?
I think I would probably be like, let's meet at a coffee shop. Like, let's meet at a place where like people are sitting and aware and are going to be very uncomfortable if you try to murder me.
Yeah, but I like the idea of like, yeah, bank is going to have a ton of cameras outside and inside their little lobby area,
mm-hmm.
or a big retail store like when you park up front, you walk in, there's going to be various cameras.
Yeah.
Facebook also allows for you to make a meetup plan now in Marketplace, which I thought was really handy. So you both agree to a meetup plan. So it's established in Facebook if something happens.
Oh, I like that.
Now, when you are meeting up from any of these places, you always want to tell someone where you're going. And if possible, don't go alone. Share your location on your phone, if you are comfortable with that, with someone that you trust so that they can monitor where you are during that. And always give them a heads up. Like, I just finished. Everything's good. Call them verbally, though. Not text, just in case.
Yes.
Never bring extra cash. If that's the only way to pay, bring only the exact amount.
And also, we live in a Venmo world now, baby.
Yeah.
Most people, if you're selling on Facebook, they should accept Venmo or PayPal or something like a digital currency Zelle. Of some sort. You don't have to be carrying a sum of money, and that you're going to have to send it to somebody with an account in something.
Yeah. So when possible, use one of those instead, obviously. But if you know of a fun safety tip that you do when you buy or sell on any of these marketplaces, feel free to add it to our episode art if you want to comment on it and share it with others.
Or in the Bat Bonfire.
Yeah, because I think that this is so common nowadays, and this is a common way to buy a ton of different things. And a lot of people build their businesses off of these marketplaces now.
Yes.
So it's a good thing, but also you want to be cautious and share best practices.
Yeah, it's a good thing to buy things used in the world because we don't always need the newest thing. And if there's a good version, like, let's not keep just making stuff. Like, let's reuse stuff that's still good.
Yeah.
But we're going to round out the episode with another thank you for Stacey for recommending this case. Very interesting. If you have a case you'd like us to cover, feel free to send them our way. We love a good episode suggestion. We have a running list always going. And if you have a listener story, and we mean any story, kind of spooky, a little weird, unnerved, do you have a ghost? Is there a man in your walls?
Hope not.
Did you have a gut feeling and then you were fucking right? Did you meet a sketch person off of Facebook Marketplace Facebook generally?
Oh my gosh. Those stories are, I don't know if you have the TikToks and stuff of like Facebook Marketplace chat histories.
Oh no.
Oh, they're something.
But anywho, any weird story, we want it. I don't think we've turned a story away yet. We love them. One of our favorite episodes of the year. We are trying to get those by mid to late September. We haven't put an exact date on it yet, but get those stories in sooner rather than later so we can get them all set. Sometimes we'll ask you follow-up questions too. You can send them via your own voice, you telling your story. We love it. But also if you're like, I don't want to say it myself. I want you guys to read it. We will. So you can also send us it in writing. If you head to our website, you can click submit your story and it'll be there. Also, should you be existing on an application of some sort where you can leave a review, we would so thoroughly appreciate it. It helps us grow. It helps other people find us. I know that you can leave them on Audible, Apple Podcasts, and then you can also do like a Facebook review too. If you do any of these things, if you take a screenshot and you email it to us, we'll send you a sticker as a little thank you. But that rounds out our end of episode housekeeping. This was a really interesting case today, though.
And we learned a lot about magnet fishing.
We did.
Which, like, I knew what it was, but it just sounds more exciting now.
It does sound more exciting.
Not for the bad purposes, obviously, but like when we were looking through it, all the cool stuff people have found that were not related to murder.
Yes. Yes. And with that, have a good weekend.
Thanks for creeping with us.
Thanks for listening, and as always, a special thank you to our patrons who support us via Patreon.
Please see the link in our show notes to learn more about how you, yes you, can begin to haunt the dump, guard vortexes, or even become a scorching Sasquatch.
Ooh. Also in our show notes, you can find the link to our website, more information on our sources, our social media handles, and our merch store.
We'd love for you to keep creeping with us. So if you like this episode, please subscribe, rate, review, and share the show with your fellow creeps and or ghosts.
I beg of you. If you're just a generally curious person, I cannot suggest the magnet fishing Reddit enough.